Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin Schiller. Griffin, how you doing?
How's it going? I'm doing pretty great. You know, I think DC fandom gave us a lot to sort of talk about.
It did.
And it's nice to finally, you know, have just like movie trailers and just actual substantial movie news that isn't, you know, oh, this release date got shifted. I mean, we could talk about Tenet.
Three men and a baby's getting remade. Are you saying that wasn't like an amazing like headline for the preview podcast?
I mean, it's pretty great. It was my favorite story of like the past month. You know, or we could talk about Tenet for the millionth time.
Tenet's delays for the millionth time. What's been pretty cool. Since last week, where we didn't end up doing one of these, it's been like a nonstop barrage of like real. So, like movie news and updates, and then starting tomorrow, movies actually come out. And depending on when, Tenet has already come out. So it's been weird. Like the last 5.5 months, there hasn't been a lot of like prime content for a channel like this, for a podcast like this. It's just a lot of like, I don't know, isn't it crazy the year that we're living in? And then all in the span of 1 week, everything changes. I'm going to the theater 3 times in the next, between now and the next podcast.
Really?
Yeah. Cause, New Mutants tomorrow, and then Bill and Ted, and then Tenet.
Okay. Interesting. Is Bill and Ted a theater only experience, or are they doing that on VOD as well?
It's both.
Oh, okay.
I was going to watch it VOD. And so I put out my deal for the week where I say what I'm seeing or what videos I'm posting. And my sister, who's seeing New Mutants with me Thursday night, she's like, dude, why are we going to go see New Mutants instead of Bill and Ted? This is ridiculous. If Bill and Ted's coming out, why are we saying, like, whoa, angry sister that found me on Twitter. the issue is that Bill and Ted isn't playing Thursday night. If you want to go see it, let me see if I can find a time. And it's not Cinemark is the big theater around us. Cinemark isn't playing Bill and Ted, but a place called Flicks Brew House. That's kind of like Alamo Draft House knockoff here in Austin. And it's other places too, but they had it. Their first showing is 12:30. So I'm seeing that with my sister. So I'm seeing 2 movies with my sister in about 16 hours. And then Monday I see Tenet. So
it's exciting. I'm traveling to Vegas to go see Tenet on Monday. So that's a great 5-hour drive.
By yourself? You going with anybody?
No, I'm going by myself. Honestly, you know what I might do is I might book a flight because it's like $30.
Right.
And it's like an hour away. It's like an hour long flight. And so it's like, I could be there, you know, within time. The only problem is then I have to get an Uber, and then that's another layer of uncertainty that I don't want to, come across. But I don't know. We'll see. There's a fly on my screen. What the heck?
our mutual very good friend that we met over the YouTubes, Tyler Tompkins, is flying out to Texas to see. I mean, his family lives here, so it's a little bit more complicated than that. But he's flying to Tenet. We actually got in some arguments on Twitter with some people like, "How dare you risk your like safety?"
Oh yeah, did you get into it?
He just had, we were all kind of having fun with it, but there was someone that was a little bit, they're very proudly judgmental towards people that were putting their life on the line to see a movie, or their words, putting their life on the line to see a movie. So anyway, we got a couple super chats come in, and then we will kind of start diving into DC fandom and talking through it. I've talked with like monologued about it, but I haven't really had anyone to unload on. Cause you know, my wife, she was like, wow, the guy from Twilight really beat that guy up. But that, you know, that's as deep as the conversation goes with her. So first little super chat we had on here was Shashank. Hey, thanks, man. When both are operating at their peak capacity, which franchise would you prefer, DC, Marvel or DC? DC all the way for me. Assuming peak capacity, I like the DC characters a lot more. Heroes and villains, I think they're a much stronger set of characters just for my personal taste. The classic arcs in the comics, I like a lot more of them from DC. But you know, I love Marvel too, but it's a lot of that's just, they've just killed it at the movie game for 12 years now.
I I'm basically in the same boat as you. I think what DC fandom did was it showed DC, you know, when they know what they're doing and when they know how to get people excited about stuff. And I think the directions they're taking with their universe, with like the multiverse and just like embracing the weird. Am I cutting in and out?
You cut out for me. Hopefully I wasn't cutting out. Trouble. Anyway, one more super chat, and then we'll kind of dive into this next one. SPC Bird, thanks, man, for the super chat. Hey, guys, hope your day is going well. What are your thoughts on the Thing reboot work, Carpenter at the helm? I mean, John Carpenter hasn't directed a movie, I believe, since Ghost to Mars.
I don't think John Carpenter is directing that movie.
I don't think he's directing it, and I wouldn't want him to. I think it would be a goofy idea to do that. The Thing, I don't know why we're keep going back to this one. It was already a remake in of itself. It works. It stands the test of time. Kurt Russell's great in it. If you got to throw someone on there, I mean, it's in the Blumhouse camp. Always probably default to Leigh Whannell these days. Yeah. It's not a project that I would want or do want. You have any additional thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I don't want to see it. We already had a Thing reboot back in 2010 or 2011, and I didn't think it was very good. It kind of like lacked what made that, or not the original. Or you know what? The Thing has been remade at least two times. Yeah, so it's like, okay, we're getting another Thing reboot. Why are you rebooting specifically John Carpenter's movie?
Right.
Just do your own spin on it. Again, going back to the fact that we had the reboot or the remake back in 2011 and it wasn't good. So I don't care about this at all, you know?
Right. So, we're going to get started with the main section of this talking. We'll kick things off talking about the headliner on this one, of course, the Batman trailer. But if you're listening to the audio version of this, be sure to leave a review, subscribe, and I will be uploading this one to the audio version. I fell behind. The problem is there's delays in my ability to download the live stream, and then my day happens, and I just forget. It's as simple as that. I forget to upload it. And, the live version on YouTube gets a lot more views. And so that's the reason for it. It's all on me. One more quick important comment from Zombie Hoto. Sean, read comments. I am right now. I just read your comment. With that said, we got our first look at the Batman, or like
look
motion
at
picture, like real footage from the film.
Yeah.
The panel itself was fantastic. It was the best panel of the day by a lot, both because Matt Reeves had stuff to say and he just comes off like this very excited college professor and unloading his knowledge onto you. And so he said all this stuff, but you're excited immediately. Then he plays the trailer. The trailer is way better if you watch the panel. And it's already fantastic. It's already like through the roof awesome. And then with the panel, he just kind of fills in a couple gaps without – you know, not really spoilers, but just giving context for what you're seeing. And, you know, I was just losing my mind. Like normally my trailer reactions, I'm pretty, people make fun of me because all I do is move my eyebrows around like this.
He's all eyebrows, folks.
It's all eyebrows. And then I'll go, like I literally do that for this one. I was literally like tapping my feet rapidly. I was going bananas for this one, giggling while I was trying to talk about it. Griffin, so you've been highly critical of Matt Reeves being selected to direct this film. You think Robert Pattinson is the worst actor of his generation because of his work on Twilight. Did this in any way bring you around on this one?
Yes. No, not at all. I think this is going to be a terrible, terrible movie. No,
he's too skinny. You think his weight is still an issue?
Again, everyone who's criticized this man for every single thing that is, from him being casting to him, oh, he's not working out enough. Just watch the damn trailer, guys. He beat that guy down to an absolute pulp. I mean, that was scary. It was unhinged Batman, and that was terrifying. Yeah. Different scary from the Ben Affleck stuff. Ben Affleck is... I mean, it's like grizzled. He's older. He just, I guess his filter is sort of off. Whereas like this is just legitimately a guy who's still figuring it out. And he's not in the right mental state. And you get that immediately from this. I literally said it like after I watched it, I was like, I think but it's saying no more than maybe two words that Robert Pattinson is already my favorite Batman of all time. it's just getting it to me. It mixes what we love about the Nolan films, the gritty, the realistic take. Yeah. But it puts it in, it sets it in a world that's just heightened enough to give you that comic book flavor. In a way, that's sort of what Batman Begins did. But then obviously we had the other two films and it sort of made it, you know, this is what Batman would be like in a real world setting.
Right.
This, I mean, my gosh, listening to, I'm glad you brought up the panel because that was arguably my favorite part, listening to him talk about the architecture and how they're, you know, blending like the you know, Gothic, I guess, turn of the century sort of like architecture from the, you know, 1800s and the 1900s into like the, you know, modern skyscrapers and everything, you know, discussing the history of Gotham City and why it's a character, why, you know, it being a character in the film is as important as everyone else. And just like listening to him talk about, you know, we're going to get these characters that we know and love, but they're not quite the people that we know yet. And so it's going to be a journey to them, you know, discovering themselves. Obviously the murders in this movie are key to helping Robert Pattinson sort of like, or helping the audience sort of like come to terms with what this Batman's past is. So like all of that is just absolutely fascinating stuff. And on top of that, the trailer feels like a David Fincher movie. Like it does. And I understand that the internet has basically deemed it, you know, it's Seven, it's Batman meets Seven. And I'm like, yeah, that it is, but
it's
also
it's taking the one iconic thing of a genre, like the most prominent, and being like, well, it's like that. So that's all it is. Like,
yeah.
Okay. So we can only have one dark psychological serial killer movie.
Yeah.
Came out 25 years ago.
I mean, yeah, I know it is the obvious go-to choice. I think I was even guilty of saying it. I mean, there were a few shots.
I don't mind the comparison. What I mind is when it's a condescending comparison.
Oh,
Those are two very different things. Like saying it's like Seven. Absolutely. Totally get it. But what there are people that are like, dude, is it just David Finch? Like, come on. What,
oh, yeah.
That's a
yeah.
compliment. Come on. Stop treating a compliment like a criticism.
Yeah, I actually have to ask you, did you see any negative reactions to the trailer? Because I have not at all.
I followed a few things. I watched a few that were comic book purists, people that really read the comics being like, he just looks too skinny. And I still believe that. I think that that is a valid criticism. It's not going to make the movie bad. It's not going to make me not enjoy the movie. But like, I very much appreciated the fact that I saw Ben Affleck and I immediately went, that guy could beat the crap out of me. Like that guy is the biggest guy in the room and brutal. And he does CrossFit. I saw it in the movie. And based off what you saw in this, like obviously when you see him smack beating the guy down, of course he sells it. Absolutely. But other shots, he still looks, doesn't look like a big imposing guy. So I would agree with that. But that, and then his bat voice.
I loved it. You didn't like it? Oh, come on. It's so good. It's so good. There's no processing. There's no like weird bail. Like I'm going to get throat, like whatever from it. Like, you know, bronchitis by doing it. It felt like real. Like if Batman were to talk, like this would be it. You know,
I noticed it. I was like, okay, you know, I'd like there'd be a little bit more husk to it. I saw some other people that were more critical of it. That's the other things that I heard. I mean, those are the two that kind of came to mind. Our buddy Christian, 1 minute movie critic, I think he said he just didn't feel anything. I didn't really read his full elaborate thoughts.
Watching the trailer.
He said he didn't feel anything. I didn't want to get into it with him because I was like, what, dude, what are you talking about?
How can
you
work?
So, but those are the ones. I haven't seen anyone that was actually like, this trailer looks bad. Even the person that the stuff that I mentioned where it was some criticisms, they were still like, oh, yeah, I mean, it, you know, looks intense. And then criticisms of the bat suit. It was a lot. It's all a lot of the stuff that I've said before, but no one was, it wasn't in the context of this movie looks bad. It was just, why can't the bat suit look like the comic book bat suit? Like,
well, that's I mean, I don't know. I kind of liked what Reeves was saying about this bat suit and everything. Like it's in literally everything like regarding his character from like the, you know, the Bat Mustang, which is the Batmobile and everything to, you know, just the suit and whatnot. It's like everything is tailor made for practicality and functionality, which like this is a year two Batman, like that. Yeah, of course. It's like you want the armor to be legitimate armor. Like if he gets shot point blank in the head, you like,
or chest, as we see in the trailer.
Right. Or chest. Right. Like you want to believe that this stuff is going to deflect it. And I loved how he was saying there was like chinks in the armor or dents from like where he's been like, you know, beaten up in like the first year on the job and stuff like that. So I mean, like, obviously, I'm sure they'll do some updates to the Batsuit in sequels and stuff like that. But I loved the, I don't know, it felt tangible to me. Whereas, like, I don't know, like the Bale suit in Batman Begins, just it's like, I don't know. It just feels a little too rubbery. As much as I love it, it just, you know, it's like one of those things, yeah, where it's like, okay, definitely feels like a studio designed this. Right. The same thing, the same way with like obviously the Keaton bat suits and then like, right, the Schumacher ones. I think the only one that kind of fits the bill for best of both worlds, truthfully, is the Batfleck one. The Batfleck, right, suits really do feel like,
to me, that's the best. That just, it looks, yeah, like my toy, wherever it is, of the Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah.
Boom. That's it right there.
Yeah.
Like the Dark Knight where it looks like he's RoboCop with a cape. Like I just don't like that stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously that's movie's great, obviously. But, and so it's nitpicking details. And it's like, I just don't like when they go in this direction.
Yeah, yeah.
And Batman v Superman did the Dark Knight Return. So Reeves had to do something different with it. All right. Here's another question on the subject. Super chat came in the trailers and the movies. Do you, yeah, think the Batman will be rated R after the Joker made $1 billion and the vibe of this trailer? It's in the realm of possibility. I don't think they would, because Batman at his core is a character that can be for all ages. And I don't think you want to shut that door that much to younger generations. Whereas Joker inherently to it, I mean, it's a cheaper movie too. The Joker is it made $1 billion, but it, sure, didn't need to make $1 billion to be incredibly profitable. Since it did make $1 billion, Todd Phillips refilled his second pool with gold and started swimming, yeah, Scrooge McDuck style in it. But I don't think they would, because it's one of these characters that's just too broad appeal. But you look at that trailer, I'm not surprised if it is. So if I have to bet, I would bet PG-13.
Yeah, I mean, like if it's, I mean, it's Batman, so PG-13 definitely feels appropriate. You know, for all we know, there could be an unrated cut or an R-rated cut of the film when it hits like home, yeah, media and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. That I can see. I'm going to be honest. I can see this being R. I think it might be R, just given what Robert Pattinson has said about the film, how like the, you know, restraints are really lifted. Matt Reeves is going all in. He doesn't, you know, there's really no filters on this. That trailer, you know, I guess just like the nature of the film being like a, I guess, a serial killer type detective comic, yeah, you know, come to life.
He used the phrase, this is a detective story, which that's what everything I've wanted. That's
exactly,
that was like my number one, make it a detective story.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, it's a detective story. It's based off Chinatown. It's about investigating all the corruption and unraveling this mystery. I was like, yes. Yes, I love what you're saying right now. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're fine. Because that's, I mean, he even said it during the panel. He was like, and that's one of the areas of Batman that I don't feel like, you know, for all the great interpretations we have not seen that version. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I want to know why he's the world's greatest detective. I want, right, to see him actually go through the work. And like, I mean, I want to see like, you know, that David Fincher-esque, you know, serial killer thriller, those like thrillers. So I feel like this will be that, or it'll be in the vein of those films, obviously with a bit more action in it and such. But yeah, going back to the whole R-rated thing, I mean, look, Deadpool made a boatload of money, mm-hmm, off of being an R-rated film. Logan did very well being an R-rated film. I also feel like DC has positioned themselves where they can afford to do something like this, yeah, because we have Wonder Woman 1984, which if it actually hits theaters this year or whenever it hits theaters, it will do well at the box office. So I think that like, okay, you got a lot of money riding off of that. Joker made ridiculous amounts of money. You know, the Zack Snyder's Justice League, I'm sure, is going to help them bring in a lot of money on HBO Max. And then like some of the other projects like the Shazam film, The Flash, it's like they have enough PG-13 films in there to,
it's safe, you know, bets.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the Batman is padded by these other movies that are more, you know, family friendly. Yeah. So I feel like they can afford to do that. And I think that's sort of the direction they're taking with this. They're allowing Reeves to just get in there, do his interpretation of the Batman and be like this. It'll be a mainstream tentpole film, but I also have to imagine that they're going to go for prestige as well with it. Yeah. I mean, makeup and costumes and all that stuff alone, I think, is already gunning for an Oscar, which I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit with the Colin Farrell and the Penguin stuff. But
yeah, like I said, I'm not surprised if it goes R. I interpret some of this through the lens of, I view it from the lens of, when can I take my kid to see something? When are they going to be old enough to see something? And so there's a side to it of, the movies are the most mainstream form of popular culture.
Yeah.
And so the nature of Batman is one that it is an on-ramp for a new generation. And so then if you make your Batman movie rated R, then that's not an on-ramp for the next generation. It's on-ramp for all kinds of people. You can make money now, but it doesn't get my 8-year-old, 9-year-old by the time this comes out to be able to go see it the way that when I was 8 years old, I could go see Batman 89. That's when I say all of that, or in your case, 10, 12, when Batman Begins, Dark Knight comes out.
Yeah.
So it's more that trickle down thinking that I agree with everything you just said. They have all the margin to be able to take a risk. And it's not that big of a risk because it's like money, even if it's rated R, and the Joker proved that they can kill it with an R-rated movie. So, we'll see what happens. I'm not surprised either way. If I were to bet, I would bet for the PG-13. When they announce an R rating, I'm going to go, okay, yeah. No surprise there. Yeah, you mentioned the Penguin. Let's cut it. What are your thoughts? We're already 20 minutes in, so we got a lot of stuff to cover. So real quick, what are the final thoughts on this one?
It's funny 20 because
minutes and we're on the first deal.
Yeah, I the same thing happened to me on my show yesterday, whereas like I was like, okay, we're gonna talk about fandom. The main topic was comparing the two Suicide Squad things, and then we just talked about the Batman for like 25 minutes. It's gonna happen. But yeah, going on to the Penguin thing, dude, I had to triple check from sources that I knew, and the information I was told was like, oh no, that he's done costume tests and like he hasn't shot his scenes yet. And then it's like, no, everyone's like, no, dude, this is legitimately Colin Farrell as the Penguin. And I'm like, if that's Colin Farrell as the Penguin, they better be that's like ungodly, like prosthetics. They better be winning the Oscar next year when this comes out. And lo and behold, the actual, special effects company that did the prosthetics for Colin Farrell put out the tweet. There it is. That is actually Colin Farrell as the Penguin. And I'm floored, man. That's next level makeup. Like it's kind of just shocking to me, that's actually him. So.
A couple of things real quick. Catwoman's in there. Riddler's in there too. It's a very different serial killer Riddler. Catwoman is an actual cat burglar sneaking in, very comic booky like type shots of her lowering down and cracking a safe. And then of course the Pattinson beat down in there that everybody was talking about. That's just that a nice, it's a great trailer shot. Cause you're watching like, oh, this is cool. Great tone. And then you want to see Batman in action. And then you have this, all you need is this one shot of him just destroying this guy. There it is.
Yeah. Did you see the people who are like, why does this guy look like the Nostalgia Critic? The Nostalgia Critic, the main guy, they were like, oh, this looks like Doug Walker, the Nostalgia Critic. And then like they like put the comparison side by side, and then they had like they superimposed his face while he was it was so funny. So funny.
All right. We had a super chat coming from Shashank. Thanks so much. Sam Raimi's original Spider-Man or Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy? I believe I go with the Dark Knight trilogy normally. I believe that's the one I go with normally. I don't remember what I said. I have a favorite trilogy's ranked top 10. Dark Knight probably comes out on top. I think in both cases, the first two are obviously very strong X, and then the third one is kind of the weak spot. And I would say that for both of those trilogies, but I think Dark Knight is a little bit more consistently strong.
Yeah. I love all three films equally in the Dark Knight trilogy. It was incredibly influential for me just in my love of Nolan and my love of film. So much so that the trilogy as a whole are probably my second favorite movie of all time, just because I can't separate them. But so yes, the Dark Knight trilogy for sure.
Then the Star Wars guy with the super chat, thank you so much. Hey guys, just joined, so excited for the Batman. How do you feel about Mulan being $30 on Disney? It's a tough one. What I've always said is they're just in an impossible situation where they need revenue in the year 2020. Theaters aren't open, and they have all of these movies that they spent $400 million on, and they just have to find some way to get some revenue during this year. And dropping it on streaming doesn't get that revenue quick enough that they need for the movie. So then you're in a scenario where they're like, okay, do we charge 20? I don't know what the number is. People seem to I thought 20 for a lot of these movies that they were doing $20 for was too much. Mulan, I think 20 would have been post totally fine. 30, everybody seems to think, I think that's a little bit too much. That doesn't feel quite right, especially with your release model. The thing that's strange about it to me is that in 5 months of theaters being shut down, all of these big studios haven't come up with a win-win. They haven't come up with a better option. They haven't come up with the, if you pay $30, you can watch it for the next month. Or you can watch it for the next 24 hours, and then you get a huge discount on buying it when you can buy it. And so you can buy it for like $10 after. They haven't come up with something that feels like the consumer doesn't feel like they're getting screwed over.
Yeah.
And that's what's surprising to me. And so the other thought to it is there seems to be a very big divide between families and single adults, where on Twitter, it's pretty tense at times where it gets nasty. I have three kids. My whole family would go see this movie. So this would be a $60 whatever. I mean, it was really expensive for us to go see this movie in the theater. And so $30 doesn't seem that much to me. But I'm a family of five. A single individual, $30 to watch it at home. They're trying to find that price point, and I don't think they found it, but that's where we're at. How about you?
I think it's fair, to be honest with you, because not only do you get it to rent, not only is it like a rental fee and you're seeing like a brand new movie that was meant to hit theaters, and we're not talking about just any brand new movie. We're talking about one of the tentpole films of the year. But you can actually, I mean, you're basically purchasing it. You have it on Disney Plus to rewatch it as many times as you want for that fee. So I guess I just, to me, it's like, oh, that's a steal. And it pays for itself within one viewing. If you invite literally one other person to watch it with you, if you just split the cost with one other person, if you're a single person living with roommates, see if they want to split the cost with you. It's $15 and you're already like, it's already paid for itself. So I guess that has never really made sense to me. Also, what is Disney's demographic? Families. What is Mulan? A family film. Of course, they're going to market towards demographics, and $30 for, I mean, let's just say we go with the nuclear family, like a family of four. That is still a steal, a great deal, because that's not even taking into account concessions or any of that stuff. And you can watch this blockbuster tentpole movie in the comfort of your home. I understand looking at it on first glance and being like $30. Okay, that's steep. But then when you read into the specifics of it and how you can, you know, you're basically buying the movie, I feel like it's totally, it's a great deal. So I guess I've just never, you know, the gut reaction, I guess, is the thing that I'm like, okay, we'll just actually look into it a little bit more and think about it. It makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and the one that always struck me is out where people are like, you have to pay for Disney Plus. Plus you have to pay for this on top of that. It's like, I mean, Disney Plus had so many insane deals for launch and cut so many deals with cable providers or whatever that even if you have none of the deals, if you have the most expensive way you can buy Disney Plus, what is it, $6?
it's literally $6. Yeah.
It's hard for me to say. All right, we're going to jump on a Snyder Cut in just a moment. One real quick super chat. Thank you so much from Tom. Asks, thoughts on the Flash Season 7 trailer? I watched it. I'm caught up on the Flash. I have my ranking I put out back in June. So I still watch the show. It just felt like more Flash stuff to me. There was nothing for me to grab hold of and get excited about. I'm largely burned out on Arrowverse, still having a little bit of fun with Flash. And so this trailer was like, it just showed me what would have been the next step from where season 6 ended. And so you go, okay, I get a little bit of a vibe for where things are at. But because season 6 ended not with an actual season finale, because they couldn't shoot it, they had to kind of do this truncated, and they did a pretty good job of making it feel like a season finale, even though it wasn't. But because of that, this doesn't feel like season 7. It feels like season 6, part 2. Normally, yeah, when they do the season trailers, we have a new villain showing up. We have a new set of scenarios. And so then there's something really exciting that you're seeing that's really quite different. Whereas with this one, it feels like you're just watching the next few episodes of the same season. So I didn't have anything that was worth doing a video out of it. That's why I know I didn't do a trailer reaction or discuss it too much. I just didn't have too many thoughts about it. It was kind of like, okay, cool. I'm not less interested. I'm not more interested. I don't feel like I got anything actually new out of this, but it does exist. You don't watch The Flash anymore, correct?
No, I'm kind of burnt out on it. Yeah.
So with that said, let's move on to the other gigantic trailer. It was amusing to me that this was one of the big event trailers from it. But so we got the very first look ever at the Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, mm-hmm, besides the first two trailers that came out 4 years ago when Zack Snyder, mm-hmm, was still the director of the project. So it was a little bit weird to me that how much it was hyped up as the first look at something that, the reason that we were excited for the Snyder Cut, the reason we knew something existed, the reason we knew things had been dramatically changed was we saw the trailers he cut that had 75% footage that wasn't in the movie and they were color graded differently. So it's kind, mm-hmm, of funny to me, though, a little bit of the way this has been treated. But at the same time, it's like that, you know, makes it tangible that it's really happening. Like, wow, they're really doing this. And then, of course, it was designed not to really tell you the plot, because we already know the plot, but to show you how much different stuff is in this thing. And yeah, so, you know, I dug just getting to see more of it. The big thing to me was just that final little bit where they actually had dialogue and you get Batman v Superman, Batman showing up. And yeah, like, I don't, yeah, care how many demons he's fought. He hasn't fought us, not us, yeah, united. You go, oh yeah, that's the guy that doing those types of lines from Batman v Superman, yeah, not the, you know, the burnt out skin complexion looks a little bit different. His weight has shifted and he is pissed to be filming more of this movie with Joss Whedon directed. Not that guy that we saw in the movie that was released. We got the one that still enjoyed playing Batman, yeah, for that lighting dialogue. So I dig all that. What did you think, yeah, about the trip?
It was great. It was a great tribute to the fans and such. I think it gave them everything that they were hoping to see in a first trailer. I'm glad you brought up that line, because that line was like, so, oh my God, it was great. And it got me pumped. It was like, yes, that's Batfleck from BVS, a little bit more wiser, a little bit more mature, even though he's already, you know, a middle-aged man. But anyways, it was everything that I think we wanted from that. And I was like, okay, it's like not us united. And I'm like, yes, Justice League United. Like, yes, that's exactly what I wanted. That's like the equivalent of Cap saying, like, you know, Avengers Assemble and stuff like that. So I loved it. Mm-hmm. And then the other stuff to me that stuck out was the cyborg stuff. Obviously, yeah, we, you know, Zach has basically spoken ad nauseum about how that, you know, a cyborg is the heart of the film. And so I feel like you definitely get a sense of that in there.
That's the phrase he used. If you guys didn't watch the panels and stuff, he said Cyborg is the heart of the film. They asked him directly, who is getting more screen time? And they're like, the Flash is, but Cyborg is the one where this is like, this is the heart of the film. So that's all that Cyborg stuff is very important to whatever is different.
Yeah, for sure. I think the big thing for me was like while watching it, I was like, this reminds me of Watchmen Zack Snyder. Like this is, it's the perfect melding of like his
could also potentially be that he reused the song Hallelujah that he used during a saucy scene in that movie.
Right. I'm sure that was a little bit to do with it, but just the way that it was sort of structured, I was like, okay, it's the mythic, epic, godlike imagery paired with intense character drama. Again, I was talking about this yesterday. I was like, BVS Ultimate is 2 hours of straight character and ideological exploration and 1 hour of action. Mm-hmm. And I
rewatched
like,
it 2 days ago, and it's like that. I mean, that's one of the issues is that it is pacing. People criticize him, although he's all visuals, no substance. Batman v Superman, like even if you didn't like it, like it is touching on a lot of stuff. There is a lot of meat there. Maybe it doesn't all come together, but to suggest it's all visuals, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's no, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. And so it's like this trailer absolutely doubled down on, I don't know, maybe it was like the team aspect that especially reminded me of Watchmen, or the part of like Cyborg's dad getting disintegrated that was like, oh, that's the birth of Dr. Manhattan. It was just like, it's very clear how influential Watchmen was on his, interpretation of superheroes in general. And so I like to see that he's going forward, but with you know, kind of keeping that in mind. So it was a great trailer. I mean, it was just like sort of like a montage of everything, but it was enough to get people excited.
Well, and I think to contradict myself, even if you look at the first two trailers from 4 years ago, that was in the middle of hands-on WB, let's micromanage everything. So they put out the first trailer for Justice League at Comic-Con 2016. And I mean, it's joke. It's like every joke that's in the movie is in the trailer. And I think it was White Stripes. Like it's like the rock and roll. Yeah. Like, look how, like, see, we're fun too. Like we're energetic. Yeah. And it felt tonally dramatically different from Batman v Superman that had just come out, you know, 5-6 months earlier. And it felt like a course correction. Like that's what everyone was coming to. Oh, this feels like they're trying to course correct. Saying that, in which case it felt like they were trying to push this thing. In the Justice Con trailer panel, he said he wanted the black suit, and they told him no, you can't have a black suit, it'll make it too dark and it'll remind people of death. And it's like, right, he died, that's what are you talking about? that's the plot of the movie. That's literally what you greenlit me to make was a movie about a dead Superman and the world falling into despair because of it. Were you expecting it to be a lighthearted comedy? So, even as much as I was joking earlier, like we have seen a lot of footage from this in previous trailers, this probably captures the actual tone much better of what he was going for.
Yeah.
So, all right, a super chat come in. If my internet will work, I don't know. I might be losing. Daniel Skinner with the super chat. Thank you so much. Will you review Candace Against the Universe from Phineas and Ferb Cinematic Universe? Almost certainly not. I wish I could give you a better answer, especially because it's a super chat. I've never seen Phineas and Ferb. I don't know what Phineas and Ferb is. I've just heard of it. I didn't know there was a cinematic universe. I've never heard of Candace Against the Universe. So I would not be a good person to review it. Because I don't know what it is. I literally do not know what it is. So I'm sorry, I don't have a more satisfying answer for you. Griffin, can you inform me as someone of a different generation from me?
I didn't really grow up watching Phineas and Ferb. It was a little after my time. And I just don't care about it. I know there are other YouTubers out there who probably will cover. Our friend Zach Pope, he just put a review out for us. So if you want to hear someone's thoughts on it, go check out his review.
Go check out Zach's Pope. He has covered it. We're too old. We've aged out, unfortunately. Like I legitimately don't know what it is. Like I couldn't.
It was a Disney Channel original show, animated show, and like, you know, it was pretty well received, but it just, again, like not really
not your generation.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And that's a lot of these shows that, like, if you're in the right age bracket, it's the biggest thing ever. And if you're not, then you don't even know what it is. Like Diary of a Wimpy Kid, I couldn't tell you anything about it. And then I said I was going to review one of the movies because I was getting so many requests. Or excuse me, I was going to watch one of the movies. And I had a 1 million people message me saying, you're going to love it. It might be the best trilogy of all time. Like, any guy tell me that. It might be the best trilogy of all time. Like, okay, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. I can't imagine. Right. That can't be real. But yeah. So real quick, we're going to dive in. We got to fly through some of these other panels real quick. Our sure. buddy Kristen joined in the chat on there. Hey, guys, are you excited for Bill and Ted? Yes, I'm seeing it with my sister on Friday. So, you know, we watched it. We had our VHS tape. So my sister, I grew up watching. So it's like an actual nostalgia film for me. I remember when it came out, I had that VHS tape. And, you know, it was one of those bonding films with my sister and I. And then when she found out, I mentioned this earlier, but when she found out that Bill and Ted was coming out this weekend, but we were seeing New Mutants Thursday night, she was pissed and made sure I corrected that the next day. So we're going to go see it on Friday. Did you grow up watching Bill and Ted, or is that just a random thing for you?
It's not that I mean, like, had it been like, had my parents been interested in it or like friends been interested in it, I probably would have watched it. But I'm gonna be 100% honest. I have not seen either Bill and Ted movie, and I just don't know if I'm really interested in seeing either movie. I mean, I have to review the third one, so I think I'll just get the cliff notes. But like, I don't know. It's just never been something that like I'm all that interested in. You know, it's that, I mean, I guess it's, what was it, like late 90s type stuff?
The first one is 89. Second one was like 92. Yeah.
So it's like early 90s. Okay.
Yeah. It's before you were born. So
yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. The first one, you probably have fun. It's just real breezy, fun, lighthearted, embraces its goofy concept. The second one gets weird because it's like, let's not do time travel, let's do metaphysical. And so they like, they die and they literally go to hell. And they literally go to heaven, and then they're resurrected, and there's evil robots. Like, that's, it's funny. Like they embrace the crazy, but I don't know if it necessarily had all the magic of the original one. All right, moving back on to DC fandom. Let's just try and touch on some of these real quick. Wonder Woman 1984. I actually lost a little interest because of this trailer. I didn't dig it.
Interesting. You're not the first person I've heard say that. So that's, I'm curious. Yeah.
Because, you know, I have my skepticism about bringing Steve back, and this one kind of affirmed my skepticism of like, man, I don't know if I want the plot to revolve around, I don't know if it's some artifact or something that gives people whatever they want, that gives Cheetah her powers. But that's, I mean, the trailer's heavily like, you can have whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Super villain powers or long lost love. So that immediately doesn't sound like the most interesting thing to me. And maybe our main villain in this one, the Mandalorian, becomes president or something. Like, I got that impression because there's like shots of him at a press briefing in the White House press room. Like, I don't know if I want this. And then even the stuff that I really dug in the first trailer, I didn't feel like I got more of it here. Maybe a couple lightning, right in the lightning shots, but
oh, that was awesome.
Those are cool. When she's flying through the clouds, that's cool. But like, there was several action shots that I really dug in the first trailer, and I didn't feel like I got more of those that I thought were cool. There's more action, but not those cool shots. And so then I was also like, did we just bring it's Chris Pine's actually birthday today, 40th birthday today. Did we bring him back just to make him the comic relief?
I mean, the way I took that was like, it's a trailer, so they're obviously going to show stuff like that. I still don't think he's actually physically back. I feel like it's either a figment of her imagination, or it's, you know, the sort of like wish fulfillment thing that Maxwell Lord is promising everyone. I don't know. I think it'll be really interesting and timely too, considering the fact when it's coming out and we have an election on the horizon. And I feel like it'll probably touch on some of that stuff intentionally or not. It feels like it's definitely diving into the, the excess of the 80s and stuff. And I feel like that'll probably tie into everyone's sort of individual journey. With Cheetah, especially the thing that I'm concerned about with Cheetah is I don't want it to just be a, she's prettier than me, she's getting everything than more than me type of relationship. I want it to be a little bit deeper, and I think it will probably go deeper. It's Patty Jenkins. I have faith in her. But I don't know. I still really dug it. I mean, maybe I liked the first trailer more just because of the choice of music, but like This one, I think, gave us a little bit more of the plot. The stuff we saw of Cheetah is interesting. I think she looks pretty great, and they were wise to show her in low light as opposed to Cats. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm still really on board without entirely knowing what the film is about. So I think they've done a really solid job with this.
Yeah. So I'm still excited for the movie. I don't want to in any way suggest I'm not excited for it anymore. This one just made me less excited. And I wonder how much of it is with the music from the first one. It sets this tone of just like, we're going lighthearted fun, and you can forgive a little bit more in that context. So when you switch the music to like epic, you can have whatever you want, whatever your dream, it can come true. It makes you look with a little bit more critical eye of like, is this as epic as you're trying to convince me it is? And I wonder how much, even kind of on a subconscious level, some of that is what happened. All right, moving right along. We got a bunch of these that took place. The Suicide Squad, we got a behind the scenes look at it. It looked like a nice change of pace for the franchise. Like, it still has the villains having to be heroes with bombs in their heads. But even the way they described it as in the video, the guy says it's like a gritty 70s war film combined with James Gunn's characters and sense of humor. And you go, all right, sounds good. And then you watch the trailer and it's them like on islands and stuff, explosions all around them. Harley Quinn has a bazooka and you're like, okay, this does look like a war movie. So, you know, it's early footage and everything, but I dug it.
Yeah, no, I liked everything we got from the Suicide Squad. It got me really excited. In fact, if we're comparing the two Suicide Squad things, I thought Rocksteady's Suicide Squad game was incredibly underwhelming and I'm really not interested in it. And this was like, just, you know, I feel like the Suicide Squad has sort of been like out there in pop culture and like oversaturated within the past couple of years. And James Gunn's film looks like it's doing something different and interesting, and he's going to like weird and new places, and he's willing to go with the deep cuts and just like, here's Weasel, and here's Polka Dot Man. Right.
Like, you see John Cena and you're like, what?
Oh my God. John Cena may have been my favorite part of that entire like first look. So yeah, I'm digging everything I'm seeing from this. Very, very, very excited for the Suicide Squad.
All right, Shashank had a super chat come in. With Tenet, The Lighthouse, and The Batman, do you believe Pattinson is finally getting his due? Really happy he's coming out of the Twilight hate. So I think it's what you have to understand is there's critical coming out of the Twilight hate, and then there's mainstream. In the mainstream, the last thing people remember him in is Twilight 8 years ago, and he was in this very, very high-profile, incredibly profitable franchise that defined an entire generation that are now pushing 30, or some of them are 30. That's what his last thing in the mainstream was. But what he chose to do for the last 8 years was passion projects, build his credibility, and build himself up as a respectable actor. And so he spends 8 years doing that. So in the critical circles, anybody that's watched the stuff he's done over the last 8 years is like, yeah, this guy isn't Twilight guy. That's a job he took when he was like 20 years old. That made him a ton of money, gave him a ton of opportunity, but you know, that it never represented his skill set. That was never limiting who he was, and that everybody knows that from all these things that he's done for 8 years, and they've been saying it for about 4 years, like, this is not the same guy. That was literally just one thing that just dominated his career for obvious reasons. I think that even the fact that he's in Tenet is there. I don't know all the ways that the paths of casting, but very frequently Hollywood will put you in one blockbuster to set you up for the one you star in. So putting him in Tenet, he's going to convince everybody with that movie, like, oh, wow, Edward Cullen's grown up. Wow, okay, wow. He's going to convince all these people so that they don't go into the Batman cynical. I think absolutely. To defeat the cultural momentum of Twilight, you need to have something that's also a wave of momentum on the mainstream level. And a Christopher Nolan movie and a Batman movie will do that. assuming they're good. I mean, I haven't seen either one, obviously, but I'm assuming they're going to be good. I'm assuming they're going to put them in bright light and people are going to grow up. Like, yeah, it's a very immature thought to be like, oh, Edward Cullen, like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I just think it's ridiculous.
Because you've been a leading voice in criticizing Robert Pattinson and saying that he has no.
Yeah, you know me. No, I mean, all you have to do is literally just look at his entire filmography outside of the Twilight films. I mean, even look at Harry Potter, the one film he was in, he was everyone's favorite part of that movie, or it was like one of their favorite parts of that movie, and he showed promise as an actor. And then, like, yeah, okay, he does the Twilight films. Even he knows they're bad, and he clearly was strategic in doing them because he knew it was going to make him a boatload of money, which it did, and it allowed him to do a bunch of creatively fulfilling projects like The Lighthouse, like Good Time, like The Lost City of Z, like High Life. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have not been paying attention to him for the past, like, almost decade or so, he has been consistently knocking it out of the park to the point where I'm, like, prepared to say he's one of the best actors of our generation right now. Like, just fully. Like, he's got the leading man charisma. He's got the star power, but he also has that, like, he's able to
sparkly
dig deep
and skin in the sunlight.
Right. He's just like, look, he's got the ability to be a character actor too. It's like, he's just someone who really has the whole package. So, I mean, all I can say is if the last time you saw Robert Pattinson was in Twilight, go watch Good Time, go watch The Lost City of Z, go watch The Lighthouse or High Life or like any of the other weird indie movies that he's done. They're all really good films, and he's one of the reasons why. So,
and that's just so much the key thing, is that probably intentionally, wisely, he did indie stuff. He did small stuff that built up his resume. And once he built a strong resume, he's like, okay, I feel confident enough to go back to these blockbusters. And absolutely, I think it's going to change the trajectory. We had a question come in on Suicide Squad Coffee with the Bearded Super Chat. Thank you so much. Do you think James Gunn will rebrand the DCEU? Actually, I'll use this to lead into our next segment on here. No, I don't think at all. I don't, even if the movie's phenomenal and has 100% of Rotten Tomatoes and makes $2 billion, it will not rebrand the DCEU because they're intentionally not trying to have a Marvel-esque type brand. The MCU intentionally has one tone for all the movies. And I that is not a criticism. That is a compliment when I say that. But they feel the same. And they've been very clear that they are letting directors have their own vibe with it. And Shazam does not feel like Justice. Justice is a bad example. Does not feel like Batman v Superman. Doesn't feel like Birds of Prey. Birds of Prey doesn't really feel like Suicide Squad. They are intentionally. And of course, none of these feel like Aquaman. There is not a brand in that sense to where you, James Gunn, could rebrand it. He's going to get to put his mark on a franchise and make his mark on the DCU, but is not going to be a rebrand because there is no specific type brand to rebrand. And I'll give you your take on this one. But then the other thing about it is also that they're very clear that they're going multiverse, that they're wanting to have a lot of freedom. That's built into their model moving forward, is that the directors get to have fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like the whole MO of them, of the DCEU right now, is just like, get really great creatives into the fold and let them tell whatever stories that they want to tell. And then they'll, like, you know, use the multiverse to explain it all. Like, it's just, look, is it going to rebrand the DCEU? No, I think that panel made it pretty clear that they're not interested in like rebranding. Like, no. Like a certain film is going to be the soft reboot of a universe. No, like I'll even say, I feel like the Snyder films will still be canon. Because if the Zack Snyder's Justice League does well on HBO Max, I don't know, maybe they pony up money for the sequel, or they, you know, have spinoff shows or whatever. It's just like, they have this multiverse, so just go wild with it and just tell good stories. I feel like that's all I care about. I don't care about like rebranding a universe, or like, you know, does this fit in line with this one or whatever. Just like they will have films that are connected, and I feel like there will be like some through lines, but it's not their main focus. And I think that's ultimately the biggest that's what appeals to me the most about the DCEU right now, is that there is no like, pin super detailed connectivity that connects this film to that film and this moment in this movie to the end of that movie. It's just like, I don't need to see that all right. the time. And I think DC is sort of realizing that. No, our strength is in the fact that we have this, you know, great, just like a collection of characters, this wide universe, and these really interesting creatives who are interested in telling stories with our characters. So let's play into it. Let's use it.
Next up, we'll talk about the Flash panel and the multiverse panel. So we got a panel on the Flash, but it was actually preceded by a panel on the multiverse. And that's why I wanted to use that question to segue over. They had a whole panel as a prologue to the Flash panel, because they are using the Flash to introduce the cinematic multiverse. And they made a big deal about the fact that there is now connective tissue between all of these live action versions of these characters, and the Flash movies, the piece that's going to tie that together so that they can tell different stories and have an excuse for why things are so different from one another.
Yeah.
The 1-2 punch is really what made that panel, the Flash panel, interesting. Flash panel in and of itself didn't really have a lot of meat. With the multiverse panel, yeah. You went, oh, this is kind of interesting. Because the Flash panel, they did give us this image that very pretty clearly has Michael Keaton's Batman in the concept art. They told us that Bruce Wayne gave Barry his new suit, but they didn't confirm Michael Keaton's in the movie. They didn't talk about Michael Keaton. They didn't talk about Ben Affleck. So they didn't talk about a bunch of stuff that we know about this project. But they did talk about the multiverse and how this is the movie that's going to create that connective tissue. So I thought that was pretty cool. Nothing mind blowing. Any big thoughts on this one? We've talked about the Flash a good bit over the last bit, because it's the one that has all the rumors circulating around it and controversial choking incidents.
Right. Yeah, of course. I think the biggest thing to me was just like that, literally that concept art that you showed. I was like, oh, cool. He's going to be with Keaton's Batman fighting a bunch of guys. And then the other thing is like, oh, is it Keaton's Batman who gives him the Flash suit, or is it Batfleck who gives him the bat suit? I really hope it's Batfleck, because I feel like there's a personal connection there that will be interesting to explore. But I have no idea. So I don't know. It seems like Andy Muschietti is willing to embrace the weird, willing to tell this grand, character driven epic with that. That's going to be a lot of fun and really opens up the multiverse. So.
We had a bunch of super chats come in. Okay. Phil behind us some stuff real quick. Talking about Black Adam. Did you watch the Black Adam panel and trailers?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. It was a great hype trailer, is what it was.
Exactly. Yeah. And I didn't just feel like people were talking about it, but they found a way to like, all right, we haven't started filming yet. We haven't cast these characters yet, but what can we do that actually like gets people excited? You bring The Rock out, does his cocky swagger, like there's a new bad boy in town. And then they do two different minute long teaser trailers.
Yeah.
One of them giving Black Adam's backstory, that I thought was a good decision, but since he's not in the mainstream really. And then the second one, introducing the Justice Society and like, well, who's going to be a Dr. Fate and Hawkman. Yeah. And it was like, oh, cool. Like we're going to get a bunch of characters. You can see how he's an anti-hero. He's not like most of these characters that we get. So I thought that was just a really nice little touch for not being able to say anything, to still be able to be like, hey, it's coming and it's going to be cool.
Yeah. And the art was good. The concept art was good. I mean, obviously he, like The Rock, I think teamed up with like Boss Logic, who was really known for doing the great fan art and stuff like that. So it was cool to see that incorporated there. I love the
like
logo.
Motion comics.
Yeah. It was kind of sort of like a motion comic a little bit. Yeah, no, I really liked it. I think that got me excited was it looks like we're going to get part of Black Adam's story that takes place in ancient Egypt. Mm-hmm. And then part of it that takes place, in modern times. So it'll be interesting to sort of like see both sides of that. I think the thing that interests me the most about the Justice Society is like, The Rock was basically saying like, it's not your typical team of like, superheroes. These are people who believe in absolute justice whatever the cost. It's like, you know, if you did this one, you know, slight wrongdoing, it's like, no, they will see justice carried out. They won't cut you some slack or whatever. They're just like so vindicated in their beliefs that they'll, you know, cross some questionable lines. And so like that, to me, that's interesting because that's so different than any other superhero team we've ever gotten before. These guys who are just like purists, absolutists. Yeah. And I think there's a lot that you can explore there. That'll be interesting.
Right. And I think that without being able to give plot or anything like that, it established what makes the characters different in their place in one of these movies. And I thought that's what was cool. Real quick, let's touch on, they had an Aquaman 2 panel, no information, just Patrick Wilson and James Wan talking. And then we had a Shazam panel that we got the title Fury of the Gods. And beyond that, the point of the panel was to say that they couldn't say anything. It was like 6 minutes of Zachary Levi cracking jokes about how they can't say anything. And then Sinbad appeared and they cracked jokes about an internet meme. But nothing really beyond that. Shashank had a super chat. What do you feel about certain actors whose entire career just gets defined by one performance, like the Joker or Hannibal Lecter? I wouldn't agree with those two examples like at all. Because you could look at the Joker. I mean, I guess you could say that about Cesar Romero 50 years later, but Jack Nicholson, no, his career is not defined by the Joker. Heath Ledger, his career is not defined by, and neither is Joaquin Phoenix. So I would agree with that. And then Hannibal Lecter, people remember him for all kinds of stuff. Anthony Hopkins is not defined by that. That was a big, gigantic, like having that thing that is your peak. I mean, everybody has that peak thing that's most well known, unless you're Harrison Ford, in which case you have two peaks that everybody knows about. But I wouldn't accept those two options as examples of it at all. And I don't mean to pick on the question, but those actors have very prominent careers. They got great actors to play the part, so you remember their great careers.
Yeah.
It's more examples of like Christopher Reeve, who also, he was a Juilliard trained actor, was in plenty of other things besides Superman, but people only know him as Superman. And it's just the reality of being in a mainstream pop culture role that there's a thing that everybody knows about, everybody talks about, and then there's everything else you did that just, it's, there's these icons of popular culture. And if you get one of those roles, whether you knew it when you were cast or you didn't, like when you're cast as Superman, you probably know that's going to follow you around. When the cast of Star Trek in 1966 were cast, they did not know that that was going to define their lives because it was just a random TV show. But for whatever, like when you're an actor, when you're in something that makes you well known to people, you don't know necessarily what will be the thing that defines you. So I don't know if that's helpful.
I also think that some of it falls on the actor. Like, do they want to be known as this forever? And I feel like a lot of actors, they want to do a bunch of different things. And like for someone like Sir Anthony Hopkins, he's like a classically trained actor. He's been on stage. He's done like, you know, oh my God, he's been in some of the greatest films of all time. And like, he's given some of the greatest performances of all time. Like, he's someone with range. Joaquin Phoenix, I would say the Joker isn't even his best performance. So it's like, he's someone who's like been on the trajectory to winning an Oscar and now he's finally won it. There are people who are just more interested in performance than they are, you know, riding the wave of a character. I think it's interesting that you bring up the Star Trek people, because all you have to do is the Star Trek cast, because all you have to do is compare William Shatner to Patrick Stewart as Picard. One of them will only be known as Captain Kirk forever. The
you don't
other,
remember Rescue 911, TJ Hooker? Come on, man. What are you
Yeah, of course. The other is Sir Patrick Stewart, the actor who is known for being Professor Xavier. He is Jean-Luc Picard. And then he's also, you know, a million other things. Right. Like the guy's, you know, resume again is incredible. He's been Scrooge, like he's been on stage. It's just like it comes down to what the actor does to sort of ensure that they are more than just this single character.
So moving along. Okay, so you already touched on this one a little bit. We got a teaser trailer for the Rocksteady Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League trailer. I mean, it's just a cinematic teasing the plot line where they're off doing their thing and then Who are we supposed to kill? Superman shows up with laser eyes. They go, oh, we have to kill him. And then it says it's coming out 2 years from now. So it's tough to get excited when it's 2 years out and it's just, it's not gameplay really. I'm easy to please when it comes to video games. So anything like this, I get excited about it. But what, as you as the cynic that knows what you're talking about, what was it that was just kind of meh to you?
I don't know. I feel like I've seen this game before, just, you know, with a different name and a different cast of characters done before. I think the cool thing about the Suicide Squad is you get this, and granted, I don't know how many other members are going to be in it. I'm assuming just four, so that you can play like four person co-op with people as you're going along. Yeah. I don't know if there'll be opportunities to switch characters in or not, but like, to me, I'm like, okay, so you're already limited by that. It's hard to judge it because they're in the early stages, but I just felt like the world felt really empty and like boring. Yeah. I guess I'm just kind of done with the Suicide Squad. The concept doesn't really like interest me all that much. I'm like, okay, so they're going to have to go kill this like, you know, brainwashed Superman or like take down Superman or whatever. I assume they probably won't kill the Justice League. It'll be more of like, you know,
bit of a downer.
Yeah, right. I was having this conversation yesterday. I was just like, you know, people have been like, where's the Rocksteady Superman game? Like, where is that? Yeah. We can't even get a Man of Steel 2. Can we get a single Superman game? And they're like, and you know, I just find it funny that Rocksteady goes, oh yeah, we'll give you a new game, but it's actually a game where you have to kill Superman. Sure. And it's just like, well, that's just what, why? Come on. Is anyone really asking for this? I don't know. It just, to me, it didn't really sell me on it. I was like, yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine, but I don't know. And as someone who was really cynical on the Gotham Knights game that came out, the trailer that they released earlier, I was like, well, that's kind
we'll
of,
we'll touch on lame. That in just a moment.
Yeah. I was like, that's kind of lame, but even that seemed more appealing to me than this, you know, dumb Suicide Squad game. So I don't know.
Okay, I missed the super chat earlier. Mr. Potato, and we will be taking non-super chat questions. I do apologize that we're just grabbing a bunch of those, but there's been a lot of them. So I just want to honor the fact that they're asking questions. So do you think the Batman could overtake the Nolan's Batman? I mean, sure. I mean, there's the potential to it. Matt Reeves is a great director. It looks great. But I mean, when you're this far out, it's very difficult to make any sort like – we get pumped and amped for these upcoming things. And so then there's, okay, could it be better? Could it be better? Well, could it be better? Sure. It potentially could be better, but you know, when your bar is like the most praised superhero movie of all time, that's our bar. Could it be better than that? I mean, that's a pretty high bar. So even if it's not, there's plenty of room for it still to be amazing, excellent, well-reviewed, praised, universally praised, and still not be a Dark Knight level because of how much the Dark Knight was praised. Yeah, so yeah. I don't think at this phase of the game there's any reason to do the comparison. Let's wait till we actually have the movie before we start doing that. But could it? Sure.
Yeah. 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 I sure.
I firmly believe it is better.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know if I have much to add on that, but.
Okay, then moving along to our video game discussion. We got several trailers for a bunch of gameplay footage for Gotham Knights, a new game where Batman has died. He left a video behind saying, hey, if I'm dead, need your guys' help. So then we get our crew of his sidekicks teaming up to be the new heroes as Gotham's new knights. You know, like I said, I'm easy to please. So anything like this, I think through it sometime of like with games like this, who's the character that my daughter would want to play? Like I have those thoughts. Cause if it's all guys, legitimately, she's less interested in as soon as you have Spider-Gwen and Marvel Ultimate Alliance, she's like, oh, I can play Spider-Gwen. Oh, she's a little bit more interested. So as soon as we have Batgirl as a playable character, that certainly piques my interest just a little bit. You seem to be very less enthusiastic about these games. What would you have wanted? What could they have put out there from either one of these games that would have excited you?
A different concept. Like, again, a Superman game, a Green Lantern game. You have all these rich characters. Use them. They're ripe for games. Like, I don't know why we need to go back to the Bat family again. Like, to me, that's just not... interesting. We had the perfect Arkham series games, and like that was a really interesting exploration of Batman, and we got to play as like different characters in there. I guess it could be interesting to see how they're sort of like grappling with the death of Batman, or sorry, the lack of Batman in their universe at the time. And yeah, it'll be cool to play as Red Hood and like Nightwing or whatever and all that stuff. But it just, I don't know. It just feels like they kind of run out of ideas and like, we have to milk the Batman IP because that's the only game that people are going to buy. And in reality, I'm just like, no, that's not true. Yeah. it feels like a weird expansion pack, you know?
Yeah. And to clarify one detail on this, Suicide Squad is in the Batman Arkham universe. Gotham Knights is not. I believe that's what they've said, since people are wondering which one was which and how they tied together. That's what they've said about them. All right. Let's just kind of talk real quick on, and we'll start diving into guys and girls questions in the chat, super chats and regular ones. In about 5 minutes, we'll start diving hardcore into your questions. So start asking away on all of this stuff. But I just, in general, on DC fandom, this event seemed to be a huge hit. Very successful. Yeah. Got tons of buzz. Comic-Con at home bombed hard. No buzz, no big announcements. And what was the difference? Why was it that Comic-Con, total dud, an event just about DC, was successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was presentation. It was like what the panels were. It was like actually making a show of it and giving people exclusive stuff like trailers or like, you know, upcoming looks at big projects. I don't know. They just did it right. They generated the hype well. They said, hey, all these big properties that you're a fan of are going to be here.
They let us know. Like, we knew we are going to get Snyder Cut footage. We knew that. We were confident we would get a Wonder Woman trailer. We knew we would get something good about the Batman.
Yeah. And also it was just like the way the panels were done, the presentation, it was all in one central hub too. I felt like, you know, with Comic-Con, you had to go to a bunch of different links and like the schedule wasn't as done. It was just, I don't know. Comic-Con at home was just like an absolute dud, super lackluster, no hype at all. Fandome, my God, it was just really exciting. The people that they had there, even the stuff that wasn't focused on the movies was interesting. Like the multiverse panel, that was really interesting to hear. Was it Walter Hamada kind of talk about like, you know, the future of the DC films and where they want to go with them and everything. Then the other one is, you know, some of the, you know, listening to just Jim Lee give like
up and coming. Jim Lee was all over this thing.
Yeah. Like just listening to him give great up and coming advice to like aspiring comic book authors. It was just like, it felt great. And it's like, people love the DC characters. So, I don't know. They were just really, really interested in showing up. And it was, and again, all going back to just like the presentation, and how they did it. There was like, you know,
an actual
virtual
set. Yeah, I think that, I mean, I had it just on all day on my TV while I was building shelves, and it was just sitting in my living room building shelves and like, oh, new trailer, gotta go, wife, run upstairs, shoot a video, edit it. And then I would just start watching again. Yeah. And it like with the Comic-Con at home, it was like all just Zoom calls pre-recorded on a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just there wasn't anything to it that felt like I need to be present now. And then just the panels themselves, they just weren't as interesting. There was nothing that had that momentum to it. Whereas with this one, it was like, oh, I know I need to watch for this. And they kept them short. They weren't hour long panels. They were like 15 minutes. And so you really felt like you could miss something. So I ran upstairs to do my, Wonder Woman trailer reaction, and as soon as I shoot it, I turn it back on. I was like, oh crap, I missed the announcement about Gotham Knights. It had that vibe. Like I don't want to leave too long because I'll miss something. But yeah, they had a presentation, they had a actual set, it was all in one place, and they had announcements, they had real stuff.
Even the projects that are not, they haven't shot anything. They all brought stuff like the Flash brought concept art. The Rock did this amazing, just like, you know, hype panel for Black Adam and the Justice Society. It's like that, like, even if you don't have anything to show, make something to show, like get people excited about your project.
So Tom asks, do you feel Marvel could pull off a fandom of sorts if they wanted to? Of course, they could. They could do an event that was just as exciting with just as many announcements. They could if they wanted to. I don't know that they want to. Doesn't look like they're planning to do that. But you think, like, we know what their slate is. We know all the stuff that's coming up. We know that Kevin Feige knows how to excite people and tease things. And enough of these have been shooting. Enough of these have footage. Enough of these are down the process that they could do something like this if they wanted to, but it doesn't seem like they want to.
No, I don't think they would ever do it. Their fandom is basically D23. Which is where Disney shows all their, you know, exclusive content and stuff like that. And that's like every other year. So, could they? Sure. And you know what? I'd actually like to see it, because then you could get into some of the nitty gritty and you could have those, like, you know, like the stuff like Jim Lee was doing, talking to other comic book artists. Like, I feel like that, you know, Marvel could do the same thing. You know, Warner Brothers didn't have a Warner Brothers only, you know, convention. They were like, no, we'll take DC and we'll make, like, you know, Comic-Con wasn't a thing. We'll make our own thing for the fans. And, I hope they continue to do it, in, you know, sequential years. Like, I feel like that could be a great in-person event. Or if they decide to do it virtual, you know, every year, every other year, I feel like it could be great too. But in terms of Marvel, I feel like they're just kind of like hindered by the Disney machine, where it's like, they'll show their stuff at D23 when all of Disney's projects are being, like, you know, highlighted.
So, yeah, they could if they wanted to. I don't see it happening. But it obviously they have all the material to do it.
Sure.
But they are connected to a big, gigantic corporation that has a bunch of other stuff that does things a little bit differently overall. But DC fandom, it accomplished its goal. It built excitement and it had actual announcements, and it is created and driven the conversation since Saturday, which is a pretty cool that we finally have something doing that since the world shut down. With that said, we're going to close out the audio version. Wherever you're listening to this, be sure to leave a review, leave a rating. It does help us out. Griffin, where can the audio version find you online?
Yeah, you guys can head on over to the Film Speak channel and check out the stuff we have over there. I've been doing Lovecraft Country recaps on Sundays. We have a live movie talk show that we do on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then I'll be having a bunch of reviews coming out. Bill and Ted, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, which I am so excited to see the world's reaction to that film, Charlie Kaufman's new movie. So that'll be fun. So if you're interested in all this stuff, you can head on over to the Film Speak channel. Then you can follow me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
So that'll do it for the audio version. Thank you for listening, and keep talking movies too much.